For everyone who's joining early, this is Neil Cohen. I'm going to be your host today for the webinar. We're waiting for everybody to show up, so let's hold tight for 5 minutes, and we'll look forward to talking with you then. For those of you on early, here's a poll question that we're going to be asking right from the get-go. So if you have a chance, pick your answer. If you're just joining us, welcome. We're going to be starting in a few minutes. While you're waiting, please fill out the advanced poll. Good morning to everyone who's been joining us for the webinar. We'd love for you to start off by filling out this advanced poll. So if you can look through the questions and give it a check, that would be fantastic. And we'll be starting in about 3 minutes. Again, good morning to the Future Proofing Next webinar. Thanks for joining us. We'll be starting in about 3 minutes, but until then, there's an advanced poll. So if you could, fill that out, and we'll look forward to the webinar in about 2 minutes now. Sean and Andrea, it looks like you guys shopped at the same background store. Nice work.
We're like 10 feet apart from each other. What are you talking about now?
We're in the same barn. It extends from Silicon Valley all the way through to Toronto.
Yours looks a little bit more faded. So yeah, we'll have to get a primer on that.
There's a lot more sun in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
You ain't kidding me.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Future Proofing Next webinar. Please, if you can, there's an advanced poll before we get started. So go ahead and give that a check if you can. And we should be starting in about a minute and a half. All right, counting down, 1 minute. Good morning to everybody who's just joining us. Welcome to the Future Proofing Next webinar. And if you could, for those who haven't heard, please fill out the advance poll. All Oh, we've got a howdy from Toronto already. That's fantastic.
Wojciech is being a little bit dramatic. We have flurries, but they're only little speckles. Hopefully our last snow of the year.
I like it.
Yeah, one person wasn't able to show up because there's snow in Denver. So we never know if that means flurries there either.
Now, can you see my slides okay, everybody? Yeah. All right, I think we're about ready to get started. Why don't we wait one more minute for a couple of stragglers? But until then, if you could, please fill out the poll, which is up on the screen right now. And we'll give everybody another 30 seconds to fill out the poll. We have people who are not seeing the poll. David, we'll see what we can to help you out here. And why don't we get started? Welcome, everybody. Thank you all for joining us on this wonderful Thursday morning, I believe. The week goes by so fast. We appreciate you taking the time. My name is Neil Cohen. I'll be your MC for this morning. We have Andrea, Sean, and Samantha. We know why you're joining us. You joined in because we have some fantastic panelists. So we're not going to spend a whole heck of a time introducing everybody, except getting right into it. But first, a thank you to our community, Future Proofing Next. Jocelyn's going to be helping us out today, as well as Joanne and everybody else in the community. Thank you very much for being here and assisting us. So again, Sean is the co-founder and managing director of Wikibrands. Andrea is the co-founder and managing director of iScale. And they're going to be kind of leading us through with their expertise. And without further ado, here's the agenda. Where you can see this for yourself. These are the many topics we're going to cover today. So I'm going to stop talking and jump right into the first question for Sean, which is, Sean, innovation is this kind of amorphous buzzword that everybody uses to talk about it. Everybody's got an innovation program, and I think we're all a little tired of it. So I know we're talking about innovation today and future-proofing it, but you know, give us some context for today's conversation. What's the frame for innovation and the purpose of today's discussion?
Yeah, you've set me up well for this one, Neil, because innovation is almost like that word love, right? Like, I love my dog, I love my wife, I love my whatever. You know, I guess maybe the best way to frame it up is to say what we're not. And I think myself and Andrew have spent the last year looking at, well, what do we really want to focus on? And it's kind of more like the innovation in the wild and the applied version of innovation. So we're not business as usual, and we're not the crazy loon shots that probably have very little chance of ever reaching marketplace. And there are these two different aspects of thinking and doing, and it's putting both of those together into one kind of cohesive argument. And so that's kind of what we're talking about here. I've actually done a word cloud of some answers to a study that we've done where we actually asked people to define what innovation was for them. And so you see things like new and ideas and customers, but it's really confining it to how do we apply innovation to corporate life and businesses.
Well, Sean, you know, we often talk about like innovation and risk management, and it's funny, the whole idea is the biggest risk is to not do anything, right? And so how do you get companies to do that, right?
It's tough, right? I mean, innovation is, I'd love to just wave a wand and say, yes, we can cure you and just spend an hour with us today and you'll be great. But a lot of this is about sweat equity. And it's, corporate innovation is a different beast. If you're a startup, innovation is principally all you do. And all you have to do is get like 8 people, probably the people that knew you when you were 12 in your company, to go along for the ride with you. In a company of 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 people, that is a much more difficult assignment. So we agree status quo is your biggest risk. We also think that there's a set of processes and leadership principles and processes and things that we'll talk about in this call that really you're looking for credibility and confidence to take that next step forward. So that's what we've tried to put forward to the world in this new argument that we've got called Future Proofing Next.
Right. Well, two questions for you real quick. Like one, you know, innovation for innovation's sake, you know, isn't it about getting things to revenue or, you know, in other words, why do you innovate? Right. And secondly, what happens when you don't?
All right. So maybe the second one's easier. If you don't, you die. How's that for an answer? And certainly that probably leads to this slide. I mean, you know, we've got research that says the average business, and it really is dependent on industry, gets disrupted in about 3.1 years. So that time frame between that garage entrepreneur having that great idea to scaling up to be something very compelling and threatening to you is about 3.1 years averagely. So that's not a lot of time. And so status quo really isn't a fulsome argument to be made. In terms of why do we do it in terms of innovation, I think we do it for a number of different reasons. I think revenue and growth should be it. I'm not being a Pollyanna here by saying that it shouldn't, but I think efficiency is definitely one. I think the customer experience is another one. I think your employees and how wedded they are to your company is another one. And I think really when you look at any kind of core argument that you want to put to the world, there should be some compelling need. And the one for me that was most provocative was innovation as a core company activity is ranked 18th out of 23. 18 right. out of 23. You wouldn't right. be making the playoffs this year if you were 18 out of 23 right. in sports. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a core competency, right? So, and you have to make it one. And now where do you, but, you know, you're going to be talking today, you and Andrea are going to be talking about some information, but, you know, I think it's important to let people know where does this, these insights that you guys are going to bring up come from?
Yeah, I know Andrew always likes to call us the Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga of innovation here, but we really have brought two different things to the table. One, Andrea has worked on arguments and processes and principles that have worked effectively with 13,000 teams. We've kind of tweaked some since some of her previous past, but she has that in spades. Conversely, we have done 16 recent marketplace studies on technology and the customer and transformation and a whole range of different topics we think can bring some freshness and some currency to the table.
Well, that's great. Now, so hopefully, you know, Andrea, you're up and the information you present won't be shallow.
yes, I love being Bradley Cooper, or am I Lady Gaga? Don't know.
Right, but you know, we just had that slide before that just said that, you know, people get disrupted in just over 3 years, and it's interesting when you start looking at the trends of innovation that have been out there, they seem to have a half-life as well.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking back to, and by the way, everyone's going to get these slides afterwards, so you don't have to take copious notes, especially if you're driving. But I remember, gosh, in the beginning of working with team after team after team, maybe in the early 1990s, and that was just when design thinking came into the forefront. And so it's the first time, I think 3M made tons and tons of post-it notes that particular year, and everyone was whiteboarding, and design thinking entered as a very important discipline. And then the other part of it was that, you know, in 2011, when I started working a lot in corporate innovation, trying to apply lean startup, at that time, people really didn't even know what lean startup was in corporate boardrooms and when people, you'd walk in to do strategy sessions and they had no idea what it was. Well, now that's not the problem. So we have a kind of an embarrassment of riches. We have lots of disciplines that have been proven out in a case-by-case basis. Six Sigma is really great for efficiency. Design thinking is really great for expanding and understanding empathy and getting customer focused. Agile in the software world, where of course we live here in Silicon Valley, everyone kind of knows that sprints and we don't say failing fast. We like to say learning fast. Learning fast is really important. Speed's really important. Open innovation meant everyone's ideas could be part of this, but you know, there also leads to chaos. Everyone started knowing the business model canvas. I knew when I walked into Allstate Insurance a few years ago, and instead of Michael Porter's books, they had business model canvas books and they had like cartoons. And I thought, wow, you know, we've now literally officially crossed the Rubicon. So now the problem is, Sean and I were talking about this, and Samantha will talk about it later. You walk into rooms and it's like, if they want to do innovation, it's like number one or two, and yet it's 18 out of 23 in terms of what they're actually doing. What the heck? What is happening? Yeah.
Andrea, but you know, I look at all of these different things and it's kind of like the concept du jour. Are they additive to each other? Is this iterative or do you combine all of these things when you're doing an innovation process? Because it's like, why would you toss Six Sigma out the window? It's about, you know, right.
Right. So what we've done, and it's taken us about a year or so of really reflecting on that really important question, Neil. Because where we came up with what seems really simple about see, learn, decide, commit, which is what we'll talk about today, is by weaving together the absolute best of these practices into a unified whole that are the elements that large companies, this isn't really for startups, but that large companies with existing assets can use to leverage all of these elements, but to turn into commercialization and things that we say you can take to the bank.
Yeah. Well, and so this kind of stunned me when we started talking about this, about the concept of corporate innovation. You know, why don't you take us through this? Because it's one of those things, it's like mobile's bigger than TV. It's like, wow, okay, when did that happen, right?
You know, so. Yeah, so this is great. If you do a search in terms of how many people are thinking about it, innovation. It used to be that, you know, startups had it in spades. And it was almost like I started every time if I did a keynote, if I walked into a corporate team, it was a given that, you know, here we are from Silicon Valley and we're all about startups and everybody's talking about it here. And you large corporations or scale up size companies, you know, 80 employees, you don't understand corporate innovation. You're not even thinking about it. But this is the first time that we've reached that inflection point, right? Where corporate innovation and startup innovation are being talked about in equal measure. And I think that's great because what we hear in the world of startups, as you know, Neil, is that startups are talking about scaling. You know, they get to the point where they're funded. But unless they're a unicorn, which by the way, I thought Seth Godin said great this morning, they don't exist. Unicorns don't exist, right? But so unless you're like a black swan or something unusual, you know, and get to be huge, you need to figure out how to scale. And and also, if you're small and, you know, you need to scale, that's one part. But also the corporations need to learn what's nimble about other people's, what the startups have. And everybody knows that corporations have to pick the best of these practices and get really good at it so that next year when we talk about the study, it's not 18 out of 23, it's moved up to one or two. People are actually doing something. So that's my rallying cry. You know, Sean and I say this all the time, catch up, don't give up. It's not too late. These are not buzzwords to do to keep 3M in commercializing Post-it notes. This is really about when we say innovation you can take to the bank, it's what are the results? And we're going to talk about how you actually apply the right things to see, learn, decide, and commit. And I also, I know people just said that someone needs to go on mute. There's someone with background noise. So one of us will do that.
It's awesome background noise. No barking dog. I like the barking dog background noise. Okay.
Nice.
So, the rubber hits the road, you know, you're going to do this and you have this aspiration versus reality as you have here. And sometimes there's a stark reality of like, you know, maybe I bit off more than I could chew.
Well, companies are like cults, right? Like we really don't have a good way of looking in the mirror at times and going, how bad really is it? Because oftentimes, you know, I'm trying to remember, I think it was a Hemingway book where it's just like, you know, disruption or, you know, bankruptcy happens, it happens slowly and then really quickly. And I think the same thing with threats from the outside world. You can insulate yourself for 2-3 years and then all of a sudden it hits bone. So I've teased out here kind of 6 kind of different gaps between, I think, the genuine aspiration that many CEOs have of, we want to be good, and the reality of the marketplace in terms of you're really not, and the squishy line in the middle that says, what's stopping us from doing this? And I think just from an overall performance standpoint, as we've noted here, it's like there is the wealth of CEOs would say they do not perform innovation well. And yet, you know, certainly that's the case. In the case of speed, you know, we know startups, the one thing that startups do really, really well is accelerate themselves to marketplace. You know, most corporate executives would admit, you know, this is our biggest problem. We need to focus on that. And yet only 7% of them would admit that they do speed well.
Well, you know, and I have a quick question here, Sean, because like you always hear in the people say like, oh, you know, our big corporation has to be more like a startup. But is really what they're saying is they just need to be more nimble and agile because, you know, there's a big gap there, right?
Yeah, I think there are principally 3 things, Neil, that I would take from startup and say, look, be more like them, but don't completely imitate their practices because then you'll bring your company to the ground. I think it's quickness. I think it's your appetite for risk. Right. And I think it's your ability to make decisions in a flexible way. If you take those 3 things from startups and apply them in a corporate world, you've won half the battle.
Right. So no scooters up and down in Nerf Wars.
Scooters are optional.
Okay. There we go.
I'm a personal fan of scooters, so go scooter friendly. I think from a leadership standpoint, and we're seeing a change. I'm personally seeing a change on this, but you know, most 3/4 of CEOs would say, yes, I am willing to put the flag in the ground and rally this company to greatness. And yet, when you look at the reality, most of them are probably not following tech and trends well. Most of your boards don't have somebody that has any competency in the areas that we're talking about today. And, you know, most of the frontline staff would say, yeah, we really don't trust our leaders to make decisions based on technology or trends. So there is this massive foresight gap.
But I think that's interesting because you say foresight gap. What about hindsight? I mean, don't they see what's going on, you know, with other companies? Don't they see Kodak, Blockbuster, taxi industry? Don't they see these things happening in real time? And aren't they just, you know, I mean, wouldn't that just scare the crap out of you?
I think you're answering your own question, Neil. You've worked with companies before. We kind of con ourselves into believing, well, that's an exception or that's a different case. And of course they're seeing them, but if I was to tell you the average executive spends 32 hours in meetings, either doing email or meetings with probably principally the same group of 15 and 20 people, you tend to get insulated from the world really quickly. So yes and no, I suppose.
All right. And then finally, this culture gap, right?
You know what? We've done about 25 different webcasts in my other company. And as much as we talk about technology and the customer, you know what our conversations always come back to? It always comes back to people and culture. You know, culture eats strategy for breakfast 6 out of 7 days of the week. And as much as there's this feeling among CEOs, oh my God, somebody's doing it better than us. Most of their frontline staff would say, yeah, I'm really not confident in the direction that you're giving me. And most of businesses would say, we really haven't defined an innovation strategy, and certainly we haven't defined one that makes sense with their business strategy. So as much as there's this aspiration over here, culture is throwing it back at the CEO saying, no, you know what, you haven't communicated it, you haven't enunciated your strategy to us, and candidly, we're probably not following in rank and file behind you.
Well, and so you're talking about this, and so companies have the ambition, but they're not standing behind it with what it really takes. Besides culture, they need dollars, right?
They need dollars. They need courage, and they need an orientation. I mean, I don't know if you like the Horizons model. I'm not personally a fan of it because it implies that, you know, great things have to happen over 4 or 5 years. And that's, I think most startups have proven that's not the case. But if you look at where people are spending the time, money, and dollars, or time, money, and attention, it's really on the incremental stuff. It's not on the big stuff that we'll all probably all talk about and say, you're great.
Incremental, not exponential. Well, yeah. that kind of takes us to the seven deadly sins. And what I'm excited here about is that we're going to be bringing on Samantha Yarwood, and she's had incredible experience as an entrepreneur in the large company realm, and is going to share some practical experience with us. And you're up in Toronto too, right?
I am, and I don't see any. Oh, there is a little bit of snow outside.
Well, there you go. And yes, it's 65 and sunny in San Francisco, but that's because because Carl the Fog is on vacation for 2 weeks. So I think we're going to start off, and we got these seven deadly sins, and Andrea, you're going to be chiming in, and we can all see them on the screen. And Samantha, what I would say is that from your practical experience, you know, inside in the belly of the beast, which of these seven sins really were the ones that haunted you while you were on the job?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think fear is probably the biggest one. I mean, honestly, Sean's already touched on that. And I think it's fear of a few things. I think it's fear of failure. Obviously, we grow up in a culture where success is paramount, and we're constantly striving for that next best thing, to deliver something. There's a lot of pressure on us to perform. And I think that, you know, that falls into the corporate world as well, where we're constantly trying to achieve and find what is that silver bullet or the next big thing that's going to make us money. And because of that, there's the fear of failure, because you don't want to fail. We are not given permission to fail. What we want to do is succeed, and that's what we talk about. What I think there's a real opportunity to is to allow for more conversation around shifting it from being failure to what is the learning in there. And I think that's what a lot of startups do really well, is they're constantly in iteration mode and learning mode. It's you learn and you relearn.
I find that interesting, that the fear of failing isn't overcome by the fear of somebody kicking the crap out of you because you didn't do anything.
You know, what's really interesting is I sometimes call it the paradoxes of innovation, because it's a double-edged sword. And I think there is the fear of, if I don't do it, somebody else will. But at the same time, there's could be the fear of the pressure of, if I'm not the one who pushes this forward, then I might not get the recognition I want, the promotion I want, whatever that is.
Right.
But at the same time, I've actually seen it where, and I've got one particular example that pops into my mind, where we had launched something that was relatively innovative. It was different, and we were testing it out, and it was basically Starbucks on the go. So it was where you had the opportunity to, you know, grab a quick cup of coffee. It was, you could pay on demand, and it was served to you, so there wasn't a barista interaction. And there was some real pressure to try and figure out a way to make this work. And specifically, we designed it for being in offices and to allow people to escape to kind of that corner cafe or that third space within their office environment. And some things weren't working the way that we wanted to. And we're trying to take the learnings from that. And I saw the pressure of trying to push things forward and doing it in a different way and testing it in new environments, yet also at the same time, the hesitation to do that. So there was the fear of, if we don't act on this now, then we might miss out on an opportunity. But there was also the fear of, you know, wanting to protect the brand, wanting to do the right thing for the business. So as much as the directive was move forward fast, we didn't move. And I think that's one of the challenges.
Analysis paralysis, right?
Completely.
I have a follow-up to that, because I think that's really interesting. And you and I shared the fact that we were around in the Starbucks days when they tested polenta, because the market research showed that there was a certain demographic group that liked polenta, and they were very similar to the demographic group that liked Starbucks, and so let's do them together. And that was just, you know, one of these bad ideas of misunderstanding the role of data, and, you know, so things can get pulled. And I think that your story is super interesting, because it feels as if the rewards for doing new things might come from a different boss from the punishment of not necessarily doing things that, you know, if they don't go well, sometimes there are two different forces within the same organization. Did you experience something like that when you were working in those at Starbucks?
Oh, completely. I think if I look at Starbucks, and I think part of the reason that I do understand creativity and innovation is because I do believe the company is one of the most creative and innovative companies in the world. But like any organization, there's always the challenges around wanting to constantly deliver something that's new, but at the same time also deliver business results. And I think that's where there's a little bit of a rub, is it's, you want to deliver what the customer wants. Sometimes the customer doesn't even know what they want. And you're trying to figure out an unmet need. And I think that's where actually large organizations can learn from startups, is how do you do a little bit more of kind of that prototyping and really testing it out before you go to a launch. And I, you know, I think in that example that you gave, Andrea, and I've seen this several times in organizations, is before something is considered a test, maybe it should be tested internally or with customers before it's actually launched. And this is something that I know Starbucks suffers from, as well as other companies do, is often we call things pilots, but the consumer is already interacting with that pilot.
Right.
So it's not really a test or a pilot, because this is your launch and you're gonna learn from how do you scale it, but it's not necessarily going through an iterative process.
I think that's super interesting. And one of the things about discovering unmet needs, and we'll talk about this in the future as well, is this whole notion, what we did learn from the design thinking empathy world, you know, being able to understand what someone's not telling you, and then being able to, as you said, we always say nail it before you scale it. And Sean and I talk about room A and room B. So room A is all about generative and room B is all about judging. And sometimes they need to get together and just get aligned. And so we really, I mean, that's great insight. And it actually, the seven deadly sins, I mean, there's probably for each one, and it'd be fun to chat about this as well. And I've seen some of the feedback from the group on the webinar today, that each one has a counterpoint. You know, there's specific ways when we talk about see and learn and decide and commit, there's an aspect of each of those that can address these sins, because people have started solving it. It's not the dark ages of innovation. We're at a much more mature level, and I think we can really learn from each other as a community. So this is that's a really helpful perspective.
Yeah, and I think on that kind of see, decide, learn, and commit piece, which is really important, is the commit piece. If you're going to commit to test and do and come up with innovative ideas, stay committed, because it's not something that can just happen in a moment's notice. It happens over time, and you have to really be committed to it and to invest in it.
Great. So Neil, back to you.
Yeah. Well, look, we've got more to get out of Samantha here. We're going to squeeze you for everything you're worth while we've got you. So there's this corporate innovation playbook with questions, and actually a quick poll for everybody. We're going to ask you to answer, pick one of these to answer. And I'm going to let you look at it for a second. So we've got a quick question, Christian Science Reading Room. And there we go. There's a poll. Pick one of these. And we're going to ask you, Samantha, right now to answer this one, which is, what's the most intriguing questions about corporate innovation? Excuse me. I'm reading the poll. Culture can kind of overwhelm this whole thing, right? And Sean had the thing, is like, it eats, you know, strategy, you know.
For breakfast.
Eats it for breakfast, right? So talk about this in practicality, right? We hear about these little, you know, like these little pithy sayings all the time, but what does this really mean when the rubber hits the road, like when you're inside a company like Starbucks? You know, how does this actually play out?
Well, actually, I think it's really interesting, because it goes back to my point around fear. And I think it's creating that right culture. Is I don't think it has to be something that, I don't personally believe that innovation needs to sit on its own. What I think needs to happen is the organization needs to have a culture that allows for flexibility, allows for learnings, and really integrates that through everybody in the entire organization. I'm actually really quite passionate about this, in terms of one of the core competencies that I see for the future is helping people really develop their creativity muscles, but also their coaching muscles. Because I think one of the most important things that I see within management and leadership in general, and this is when I talk to my friends, when I talk to other practitioners, is that a lot of times people don't know how to coach and provide feedback in a right way and in a timely way. And I think if we could all develop a little bit more of those leadership skills around coaching, then what we might be able to do is help to create that culture of constantly learning and for people feeling like it's safe to fail.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, aligned with this, I've got a question from David who's on the line, which I think is directly aligned with this, which we you know, does this constant messaging around innovation create such a pressure and stress that the change doesn't feel like it's natural? In other words, is this like a, you know, we've got to change, you know, because everybody says we've got to change, not because it's natural to the organization?
You know what's funny is I actually had this conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, and we were talking about two things. Is one, we were talking about like how hard it actually is to change, and we were joking that anybody who's ever been an entrepreneur or who's working in innovation actually should probably have a therapist, and that we should also have group therapy because it's so difficult and there's a bit of a kind of banging your head against the wall sometimes. I think on that pressure, and I think back to, you know, 2 years ago when I was looking at our annual operating plans, you know, as a business, what we typically do is on an annual basis, we write plans for the next year. And what I realized was we tend to carve out time as a business to, this is the time to come up with new ideas, and this is the time to innovate. And so there's a lot of pressure on that. And I don't think it can be a moment. Because the best ideas don't actually happen in a moment. They happen when you create space for them to bubble up. But often it's in the silence that we start to hear things and that we start to think of new ideas. So I think the real challenge is how do you create a process that allows for ongoing innovation in your everyday work, but also within every member of your team. And one of the things that we looked at doing was we actually shifted our annual operating process for a particular business unit that I was working in to move from it being a group of people sitting in a room to every single person who worked on that business being involved in collaborating on what our plan was going to look like and bringing those ideas forward. Because I think a lot of times, and Sean, you touched on this earlier around the fact that, you know, you're in 32 hours of meetings on a weekly basis, and you're probably interacting with the same like 32 to 40 people. So how do you actually expand that? And how do you get other people and different perspectives involved?
Right. I like two of the things you just said, and I know we'll be moving on to the next topic soon, but two of the things you said that are so obvious is that it used to be we had to stop everything and innovate. You know, it was, as I said, this room A, room B. So, everyone stop our quote business as usual because we have to go next door and do some whiteboarding. And then, okay, great. I kept hearing in meeting after meeting, like, wait, you know, we have to stop this because we have like a quarterly report to get written. And it's like, it should be seamless between this notion that we have to constantly be striving and this notion that we're executing what we already know. And I love that a lot, the notion of the diversity and the notion of having ongoing. It's almost like, I remember there was a hospital that said making cancer history. You know, their goal was to put themselves out of business. And so maybe we don't have to say innovation in 10 years because it'll just be so obvious that it's our lifeblood.
Completely. So Samantha, just you know how many psychiatrists it takes to change the light bulb?
How many?
One, but the light bulb's really got to want to change.
Brilliant! I'm going to use that.
So, but sometimes it comes down to leadership, right? And just time check for us, we've got like another 11 or 12 minutes to get through a bunch of information. So how does this relate to leadership, right? You know, as an innovation question, like who's the right type of leader today and tomorrow to make this happen?
And I think that's a really great question. Who is the leader today and tomorrow to make that happen? Because leadership is evolving. And I think the individual in that role needs to evolve too. And, you know, it's back to that. We only have a certain amount of people we interact with on a daily basis and perspectives. I believe in continuously learning. I call it bubble jumping, like getting outside of your bubbles. So doing something that's dramatically different than what you're used to or exposed to, whether it's going to different types of talks, you know, reading something that typically wouldn't interest you, whatever that is, but continue to learn and develop and stretch yourself. And I think that's what's going to make a good leader into the future is somebody who continuously is in that learning curve. But I really do think the most important thing for any leader is to be 100% true to who they are. So to be completely genuine, to know themselves better than they know anyone else, because that way you can use yourself as a tool, you know, whether it's you or whether it's the other person, and how you can support them to develop their best ideas. But also support and allow failure. That to me is the biggest piece. And that's tough. It's really easy to say, but it's really difficult to allow for that.
But this is a great question, and it just came up, and I think this is directly, which is about accountability for missed opportunities, right? Admitting failure. What are the thoughts around that? Like, when there are missed opportunities in the marketplace, you look at a couple of, let's like Intel, it said like, oh, that mobile thing, it's a trend. You know, you know, who's accountable at the end of the day?
I think the entire business is. I don't think there's one person when there's a missed opportunity. It's a shared responsibility. And maybe this is my personal belief, but I think each of us should be looking at what our roles are within an organization and treating it like it was our own company.
Yeah. So I'll jump in and also
our business. Yeah, go.
I'll jump in and also transition, Neil, for your sake to the sure. kind of close. First of all, Samantha, your insights are really helpful, because what we're all about, obviously, at Future Proofing Next is real in the wild experience from practitioners, because we reverse engineered it in a sense. You know, we didn't come up with see, learn, decide, commit because, oh, those are great taglines. This was tons and tons of studies, you know, that Sean's been leading for years, and tons of projects and 13,000 plus teams, and really extracting what's missing. And so the stories that you just shared are really, we'll continue on future webinars to engage with you and others about how this really plays out, because it sounds very simple to say, oh, all we have to do is constantly be learning and get roommate and room B to talk to each other and to turn intentions into actions and not to blame people. But it's not that easily done. And so I'll give a preview. First of all, thank you, Samantha, for being with us. And I'll round out my comments for today, which is that for the people on the webinar and as I turn it over to Sean, the process that we've extracted from all of the best practices sounds simple, hard to do. It's a see differently, learn new things, and be in a constant learning. And that didn't used to be on our plate, by the way. Learning wasn't as, it's in every single conversation we go to in every size company. Deciding, you know, it's, once again, there's a lot of science and a lot of art behind deciding. You have to expand your perspective to other industries. You have to make choices. You have to then commit. And I really liked what Samantha said about leadership and alignment, because we always talk about, like, you know, going to A versus going to B. If your budget is still funding A and you keep saying you're going to B, you're never going to really get there. So how to get leaders into alignment. And I think that a lot of this has to do with, the beauty is that data has now caught up, so we don't have to guess as much. And this notion of going into a pilot without data, I mean, that's shameful. We should have so many ways of modeling data. And I think, honestly, getting people into the same room before we start blaming one room for the other room's efforts is very much part of this. So, you know, we'll be probably evangelizing the see, learn, decide, commit in future webinars as well, because we think it's a big idea.
Well, and Andrea, you know, we talked about this idea earlier. Sean brought it up, which is this distinction between corporate innovation and other types of innovation. So, you know, the difference between corporate innovation versus startups, and what is it that you really want to borrow, and what are the distinctions there?
So I'll start and then I'll turn it to Sean. I mean, to me, there's a cartoon of two trash men walking up to the corner, and when the other one isn't looking, each one looks underneath each other's lid, like as if theirs is better than ours. Everyone has challenges. I mean, you know, we go to startups all the time and they just feel like, you know, it's going so fast and my investors expect so much and I can't fail because it's my credit card that's on the line. And then you have the large companies who are like, we're looking for this special kind of battery and it has to last a certain amount of time and we don't have enough people inside that can do the R&D because we got rid of our R&D, whatever. So clearly speed from one and the newness can come from either large or small. But I also think that it gets back to knowing what you're good at and having a great ecosystem to know where to get what you need. And I think that the big difference here is, and I was talking about this book Cascades that talks about nodes versus networks, right? So it's not just the individual knowledge that sits dormant, but it's the connections between it. So feel free to move forward and talk about the next topic.
Well, let's go, because we've got a lot to talk about here, which is increasing the batting average. And you've got five key principles. And again, these slides will go out to everybody. So if you can touch on these briefly, Andrea and Sean, and then we will move on to some housekeeping that Sean has at the end.
Sean, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, and we can breeze through these quickly because you're right, Neil. We will provide these slides to people. And I reserve the right to change these five up. These have dropped out of our corporate innovation study. The final results aren't back till May. So it's kind of like, much like election polling, some surprises happen. So I will spend five valuable seconds here, though, commenting on the fact that you had told me you were so good at dad jokes, and that psychiatrist light bulb one may qualify, Neil. So
anytime.
Anyway, so quickly on this, because I think we did set up the promise for listeners coming in beyond just learning about future-proofing next in our approach was, okay, what can we learn really quickly about increasing our batting average when it comes to corporate innovation? The five that tumbled up to the top from our survey already is, it really is a behavioral and cultural thing. It's about producing more collaboration, incentivizing your employees, and acting a little bit more like the startup without the "honey, I broke your organization." Because I think if you act too much, you'll go down the road of horrible rework and a number of different things. Second one was just expanding view of what's possible. I think too often we go for incremental. And I think going for kind of home runs and triples is more about focused on time in the marketplace, spending time with your customers and having that kind of orientation and focusing in on the foresights and the stuff that may blindside you 2-3 years down the road that you should be doing something about now. I love Bezos. He says, look, I don't deal with anything that I'm working on this quarter. It's like the stuff I'm working on today is focused on 2021. And I think if more CEOs took an approach like that, it would make sense. Strong C-suite leadership. I learned this when I wrote my first book, and I'm learning it again this time. If you don't have a good executive team that's aligned, resilient, gritty, candid, challenge some of the assumptions that either personally they have, professionally their company has, or industry-wide, you're screwed. So all I can tell you is if you're ahead of innovation and your CEO doesn't agree with you and he has a lot of heft and control, that's a really problematic place to be. So having good leadership, expanding a business model focus, this truly is about not producing the next flavor of Pepto-Bismol. This is about seriously considering different options in terms of how you capture value as a business. And so you see three sub drivers there. And then finally, resourcing it effectively. As we saw earlier when I presented the stats about our aspiration versus reality, the reality is, are you spending enough time, money, and people resources focused on some of these things? And too often, there's a great stat I saw the other day that if given the chance, you can make your quarter, hit your quarterly target, or you could substantially improve your business 3 years ahead, which one would you take? 80% of the CEOs would choose the quarter to quarter, which I think is a damning statement on how we make day-to-day decisions that interfere with how innovation should work.
Yeah, because it's how they're rewarded and valued, right?
Right. It's just, we know that catches up over a period of time.
So a little housekeeping at the end here, some next steps for everybody and where they can contact and do further webinars.
Yeah, we'll breeze through these quickly. I think we always talk about Monday morning as opposed to Sunday afternoon dreaming, myself and Andrea. We'd like to consider ourselves the applied, let's do this in real life. What are the quickie hitters that you can do? You know, get outside your walls. I can't emphasize this enough, whether it's 10 to 20% of your time, just get out, do something. I know myself and Andrea have codified a 6-week process that can get you from, struggling to at least producing something and providing a deliverable. Make sure in the 3-month to 12-month parameter that you identify some process that can take your ideas and bring them to fruition and also build a strategy that A, makes sense and everybody gets behind. And then finally, make sure there's some real life targets. You have targets for every one of your departments. You should have one for innovation too. And seriously look at exploring and scaling up different business models, just not incrementalism. So those are kind of the three different areas. We're launching. This is essentially our launch of Future Proofing Next today. So as much as this was a webinar, we're launching stuff that can focus on a number of different solutions for people that are interested. Myself and Andrea will be focused on getting two innovation reports out each year that hopefully a lot of people on the call today can contribute to and surf through. We have 10 types of keynotes related to all this stuff, and we do have a research study and some stuff around business models coming out next month. And then finally, for the people that are on the call today, thank you, first of all. I love you for being so informationally curious about stuff. We do have a guild of sorts that get in touch with us at hello@futureproofingnext.com. We are building a group of 50 corporate innovators around the world that will collaborate on different things. We strongly, strongly encourage you, if you want to benefit in some of the research we're getting back, join our playbook study. And also, we're launching our website next Monday with all of its social different channels. So we'll send an email out to you all then. And then finally, some follow-up webinars in early May, middle of May, and early June. And I think we'll probably present a poll here in terms of what people might want to hear from us next. So in the true spirit of interactivity, you know, we have six different topics we're thinking about doing. But if we can introduce a poll as we get into our Q&A, we'll at least inform what the next three topics will look like.
Well, and I think that's our 45 minutes. And I just wanted to say first, Samantha, thank you. Amazing insights from inside the four walls. And Andrea and Sean, incredible insights as well from your studies and your experiences working with big companies on how they try to get out of their own way for innovation and what our companies and folks online can do and take to the bank starting tomorrow, right? It's not even Monday. We're not going to wait till Monday. We're going to do it tomorrow. Thank you to Jocelyn for all your help behind the scenes with the polling and the questions. Couldn't have gotten through this without you. Thank you very much. And to everyone online out there, thank you for your time and attention. Andrea and Sean, last words.
First of all, there are some really great questions. I see the poll coming in, and we talked about the six eyes of innovation, stimulus, ranking the business models of the future, learning. So thank you, because we kept kind of hypnotizing everyone to say learning. So thanks for taking that that bait. We agree. We think it's super important, and we're challenged by all of those. So we will use that for our insights about how we plan the next webinar. And really, you know, thanks to everybody. And then Sean, you want to close us off?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to stay on for a little bit in terms of if there are some questions we get flagged, but it seems like as well, I'm seeing the poll come in terms of what topics would you like to share in the future? And they're all like an even split. They're all their children, our lovely children. So it's like, we may have to do all six of them, Andrea. but I do want to thank, first of all, I want to thank Neil for shepherding us. You, just even the sound of your voice feels like this reassuring NASA controller that's going to bring the spaceship home. So I thank you for that. And Samantha too, I think, you know, I personally, this is a real taste thing of mine, just hate kind of some of the people that speak in professional settings that have no professional credibility or have been there before. And I think Samantha, having worked so well in Starbucks and Nestle, really provided some interesting insights in the real world, as they say. So Neil, I'm going to hand it back to you, and you can take us either home or wherever we need to go.
I have one thing that I'm seeing. We're going to be getting, there are a lot of questions that have come in, which is fantastic. Sean and I are committed, and Samantha, I hope, are committed to answering them. So we'll send them by email if you want some extra conversation about it. So we'll share the questions and as many answers as we can. And also the deck, as we said, we'll send to everybody after the fact, along with an option for the webinar recording, if you would like that as well.
Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday, and I hope you guys enjoy your upcoming weekend, and go Giants.
You did not say go Giants. Okay, we'll cut that.
Thank you.
Great.
Take care, everybody. Thank you so much.
Somebody just said go Leafs, so thanks for that. Yeah. Bye-bye.